Welcome back to Running on Purpose, a podcast dedicated to training the body, the mind, and the soul for what the race requires. My name's Steve, and I'm your host. You may have wondered where I've been. I sent a salvo over requesting people to respond with their interest to the podcast, and some of you have done so in exactly the ways that I asked, and thank you for that. I feel like in a lot of ways I'm in a transition with this particular podcast. Before you start getting worried and thinking he's gonna disappear, maybe, well, if you're here, you don't want me to disappear, I guess. I'm kind of feeling my way, and the commitment I made last time, a couple weeks ago, to not abandoning this project until December 2024, has kept me thinking deeply about the ways that I can really produce something useful. One way that I'm producing something useful is these conversations with Kobe. And this episode is in fuego. He and I went through some challenges in the last episode. We struggled a bit. Those are, you know, between the two of us, we were coming from different places and weren't really, I wasn't listening very closely to the kinds of needs that he had around what he was hoping to accomplish with our conversations. And I was just in typical Steve mode, being Steve. But in this episode, I think what you're going to hear are two people riffing, two people playing, two people jamming. It's excellent. The topic is a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. And so I was able to kind of stay in a pocket, maybe be the rhythm section in a sense. Even though in these conversations, it seems like maybe I'm doing a little bit more of the, Kobe's doing the leading and I'm doing a little more of the sort of answering the questions. I think you're going to find over the next 5 to 10 episodes as we do these, that we're going to become significantly more equal. Although I think we've always been equal energetically, we might not have been equal in terms of recording time. Here you can sense the two of us kind of finding what I would call a sweet rhythm. So I hope you enjoy it. But just so you guys don't get too worried about whether I'm leaving the Running on Purpose podcast, I am not. I have a lot of plans. I have a lot of ideas. You can probably hear in my voice that I'm still a little bit off. Last 2 weeks, I've been very sick. I'm not deathly ill, but ill enough that recording either the Running on Purpose podcast or the Keep Going podcast has been challenging. I had significant issues. And so instead of fighting through, on a couple of those occasions, I couldn't have fought through. I'm still here. I'm still around. I've got some big ideas. I'll be pitching them to you soon. In the meantime, there's Kobe and I jamming on No Expectations. Anybody that's been working with me for a while knows this is definitely my jam. So Godspeed, my friends. Godspeed.
Okay, here we go. It's not take two, it's part two for the series that we're doing, like a four-part series. Well, maybe it's four-part series, but it's for sure four principles that we use to really enable running to be a spiritual teacher, to really find deeper connection in ourselves with ourselves through the sport. And so if you haven't listened to the first episode, I highly recommend you listen to the one on no judgment, and how no judgment is really key to one, obviously also being better, a better performer, but also to really be able to depth with the depth of the of this moment. And so today we're gonna move into the next principle, which is gonna be the principle on no expectations. And then depending on how it flows, but I think we'll have a third episode on No Assumptions, and then likely fourth one on No Lies. So yeah, I don't know, Steve, do you think it's helpful if well, let's assume there's some people that don't follow through on our advice, that they and they don't listen to the first episode, that we do a little like little intro what these principles are about, or sure. Do we just assume they've listened to it? And
sure, I think we can do it pretty quick.
Yeah, cool. So for me, this is really a topic for people that are just curious about the depths that running can take them. I mean, obviously we all love ourselves some good performance when it comes to running. But this is really the conversations where Steve and I really go deep into how you can move beyond performance and just really come to a different relationship with life through running. So really embracing running as a spiritual path. And so the four principles that we're highlighting here are like four pointers that if you apply them, that will get you closer to that change and relationship to life. And so it's not please don't just listen to this and then like this is not like a theoretical manual. It's really like lived principles that you need to be able to approach this as to really notice the change. It's a change in experience, so you have to practice it, and it's just a constant confrontation and a constant invitation to understand why you are so judgmental of yourself, of others, why you have so many expectations, why you have all these assumptions. It's really like, I think it's two episodes ago, or maybe the last episode, not with you, Steve, but this is going to be the one with Emily, we really heavily talked about the difference between cycling and therapy. So like therapy is therapy. What we're talking about here is not therapy, but it's essential that you have an integration part. Like we talk about all these things, but you have to integrate these things for yourself, and you have to do the actual work yourself, and you have to put in all the reps and go through the ickiness of trying to have no expectations and to drop judgment and all that. So it's much, 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 much easier said than done, but it is incredibly, incredibly beautiful what it can do for your performance, but also your experience of the sports and just your overall experience of life. And so this is the space where Steve and I nerd out about this kind of stuff. It can be quite heavy and intense, but this is where we hold nothing back. So yeah, Steve,
just one thing I want to share about that. It's just, I guess I'd use say simply, please apply. And because these can get heady and theoretical and a little bit conceptual, but if you apply it as take a principle and apply it in your life, then you can become it. It starts to be in the way you like to phrase things. So I really think that I mentioned in the first episode that this is an apophatic path, like an apathic of a path of negation. But we're framing it that way because if we don't use the negative aspect, we tend to just see it as love and light. And what we're trying to do is a little bit more get a little bit more into the suffering space. While this isn't therapy, the benefits of therapy are the way that the stuff that comes up or whatever the suffering is then brought into and integrated into a day-to-day life. And yes, we're not doing therapy, but we are doing some form of spiritual work. And so we're not held by the constraints of a therapist because we're not acting as a therapist. We're just two dudes talking about this stuff. Yeah. I did want to say, I was reading a really interesting book the other day, and I just wanted to tap one little thing because if we're talking about spiritual principles, and I'm afraid I'll forget it, so I'm just going to plug it in here real quick. I heard somebody say that, and I thought it resonated, and I'm interested to get your take, maybe not right this minute, but over the course of this conversation, that the spiritual is working with heaven on earth. So, like, the spiritual is bringing what we might conceive of and have conceived of heaven, especially for us as Western people who were raised in, even if you weren't raised in a Christian culture, you are inundated with a Christian outlook, that we if we frame heaven as being right here, right now, in this body, on this terrestrial globe, within the window of time that we have, the 80, 100 years that we may be lucky enough to have, then maybe that's what the spiritual is. I just heard that recently, and I thought, I got to say this to Kobe. So I think that's what our project is. It's right, this app of, that we're using this sort of negation to how to get into the depths of this and then try to work through those and give you some practical applications through our experiences, our give and take, our conversation to try to really dig at these four core principles that we know will, if lived and applied, will absolutely change your mental and physical experience of your training and racing. And there will also be deep, deep gold you can mine from it from a spiritual perspective if you do view this as heaven on earth.
Oh, yeah. It's also something it makes me very much think of the... I think one of the moments where spirituality started to really enter my life was through the work of Eckhart Tolle. When I was reading The Power of Now for the second time, because the first time I forced myself to read it. It's like, I can't do this. My God, this is way too intense.
Yes.
I have no clue what this guy is talking about. But then the second time, it's like, oh, this is the right time. And like everything just hits you really hard. And he's really cool with like expanding on things from the Bible without like being very like proselytizing about it. And one of the things he often refers to is like the kingdom of heaven is within. And it's like, ooh, I again get goosebumps when I think about that. Like, that's also, I mean, I'm definitely not here to say that I know what Jesus was to talk about, but it's like, it's also how I really started to direct my life. Like, really having had such a profound, peaceful and loving and open experiences, even though there were glimpses, and it's definitely not my default like frequency, but it's like, oof, wow. Once you shift this space within, like everything around you changes. It makes me think of a Wayne Dyer quote with like, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change.
It's yes. Like,
wow, damn. Wow.
Which really is fucks with your idea of reality. And as if you go down that road, Kobe, it's a super challenging space because our modern, the way people are looking at physics these days, the way that science is sort of moving out of its physicalist, materialist sort of mode, and people are recognizing, the things that the new atheist and the materialists that we've thought of in the way our scientific principles are, it's not the new science. The new science is more fluid and flexible, and reality is more fluid and flexible. We know that. We just don't know what exactly it is, and so we can't put our finger on it. And if you go down those roads from a spiritual perspective, it's interesting to see how some of the scientific, not all, but some of the scientific things that we may have been taking for granted as being true and real and physically here are more complicated and challenging and less certain than we've been raised to believe, at least over the last 250, 300 years. And so it is a way where Dyer's quote is a real thing. And even if it's not a real thing from the perspective of what reality is, it is a really good frame for operating. And I think this project of our four principles here is a way for us to say, these are mindset spaces. And we're phrasing them from the negative because we know you'll get into it. We know it'll drag you in. Whereas we talk about the positive, you might just stay kind of ethereal and up and not bring it down into the body. And that's my hope. That's why I love the fact that you phrase these apophatically, or the negative path of it. I re-listened to our first episode, and it comes through loud and clear that's what we're doing. We're trying to bring it, trying to alchemize, metabolize, and somatize these conceptual principles.
So maybe for the listener, I think, and even for myself, because I just, and this is why I just also love our conversations, because this is just the way that I happen to be talking about it. This is just the words and principles that I have found for myself that I have just seemed to like land it in. But I always find, because you're coming from a different perspective, that I also get much more perspective on where I'm coming from, because you come from a different perspective. And so for you, it's obvious, it's like an obvious observation, like Kobe, you're phrasing these in an apathetic way. I'm like, I still don't know if I'm pronouncing the word right.
It's just like a negative path. It's just using a negative to lead into a conversation. Yeah.
And so what would So then no, I'm going to ask the question to you. Like, so sure. What would the affirmative path, or what would the positive framing be?
Of all four of them?
Four principles.
Okay. So yeah. No judgment would be open.
Oof. Yeah. Okay.
No expectation.
Oh, yeah.
Would be process. No assumption would be free.
Yeah.
No lies would be truth. And if I use four, they're, if you put a podcast that said truth, if you said a podcast that's free, you see what I'm saying? It's like, and I'm not, I don't know that I want to be, you just pulled that out of the hat. So that I might reframe those a little bit if I were writing something down. But for this conversation, I think you get the sense there of why the apophatic or the negative via negativa is more utilitarian and has a little bit easier way for us to hold on to, because we have an inner we have such strong inner critics, Kobe. Mm-hmm. And so we're usually in our mental spaces operating from a sense of lack, not enoughness. And so we're going to frame it in our experience as a negative thing. So going at it and saying, I'm not going to be that, right? What it is not really as important as initially saying, I'm not that. And then it lets us open up. Oh, for I'm not judging. So therefore, I must be open. Mm. I'm not expecting. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I must.
Yeah.
You know, so you move down those pathways that.
Yeah.
And it seems more embodied. And that's really what we're trying to do here.
It's exactly it's instantly more practical. It's like, be open. It's like, yeah, no, what do I do? It's like, fuck. I have no clue. Where do I start? Where it's like, don't judge. I mean, and obviously it can come from a very judgmental place in and of itself. Like, you shouldn't judge. But it's then it's like, oh, now I can become aware of my judgment. I kind of don't know where it's taking me. It's like, it's also cool that it's requiring a leap of faith. It's like, I have no clue what these guys are talking about, but let me start practicing dropping some of the judgment. It's scary at first because I think I need the judgment to like be really hard and racist and to be like really like redlining it. If I drop the judgment, it's gonna like take away from my performance. But maybe if I just ease the judgment a little bit and I start to feel more open and the softness and the relaxation in the experience and in the intensity, it's like, oh, that was a much more enjoyable experience. And I'm actually doing better for it. It's like, oh, okay. And that feels open. It's like, oh, okay. Now we're getting somewhere. Okay, cool. I like that. Maybe that was helpful for the listeners too.
So. I'm sure it was. So let's go down this road with no expectations, right?
Yeah, cool. And so before we started talking, you mentioned that this is something that you're very maybe in contrast to non-judgment, like with non-judgment, it's not necessarily something that you are implementing on a day-to-day basis with your runners per se, or explicitly, obviously implicitly, I'm sure. But like when it came to no expectations, you're like, oh, I have some very specific things I can share because this is just what I do with athletes on a day-to-day or weekly basis. So I'm very curious now, what are those things? What does that look like in your coaching?
Well, the first step, it's not something I lead with, but it's a place that always comes up somewhere in the process of preparation for an event where the athlete. And remember, my primary gig is a running coach for performance and pursuit of a race goal, of a race performance. What we're doing here is more of a hopeful sideline of discussing these kinds of topics. But they need to be practical. And so therefore, for people who are pursuing or trying to perform, this one always comes up. There's never a problem here. And that's because it's somewhere along the line the athlete has to get right with their goal. So a person that I work with will set a goal on a particular day to have a particular performance, and they put a lot of stock in that goal. And that's a beautiful thing. a necessary and beautiful thing. But what I find very, very often, I'll use the word, it is ubiquitous. All of us, unless you're really special, you can pat yourself on the back now. Not you necessarily, Kobe, but others. You will move into expectation. You will take that goal and it will become an expectation, because the goal is not enough. The goal, for most people, the goal is a placeholder. It's a placeholder for a felt sense experience they want to have when they cross a finish line on a given day, at a given time, in a given place. And because they want that felt sense experience, they need to then, the goal isn't strong enough to hold the weight of the expectation. And they don't recognize that expectation because they think, they confuse the goal with the feeling state. Okay? So, but what they get confused, and it gets balled up into a really messy string. You know, if you take a ball of string and you pull it all apart and you put it all that, and you let a cat grab a hold of it, he's going to put it all right back into a ball, and it's going to take you forever to get it out. I was just undoing an extension cord the other day for mowing my lawn, and my extension cord, if I don't put it away right, it ends up turning into a 10-minute project of getting it to work appropriately. And I think many of us, our goals become expectations because we want this feeling state, and in order to stay safe from a nervous system perspective, we need to buy all the way in, and then we're invested. Now we've got time, money, energy, everything else invested, and more importantly, we have a feeling state that we identify with. And this is the real thing. This is the place that's really problematic, because where you find expectation, you almost always find a constricted and constricted identity around the selfhood ego process that keeps us alive and safe, that we are so attached to. And then the goal just becomes this synonymous with expectation. And those things then create really, really tend, because there's not an openness there. There's not an ability to work effectively and openly, freely, you know, in a truth space. It's very difficult to get positive feedback loops that will create the trust space necessary to allow the kinds of things that we're looking for. You know, maybe another word for this, instead of saying, I forget what my word was for expectation, but I would probably probably revise it right now and say allowance. I'd probably say to allow. Yeah. So it's a little bit more than open. It's like allowance is more of a universal, there's some kind of, yes, and it reaches to expectation because there's a universal, there is something there of value and necessary. Whereas openness is a little bit more just like wide open. Mm-hmm. But allowance is more like, I have a libido here. I have a desire, a wish, a passion, a thing I want. But that passion thing, my attachment to it and my identity with it will turn into an expectation, which then creates negative feedback loops that are very difficult. Then you have to muscle through them. And then you're using identity constantly. So that's why I know it's something that I can utilize, because I know it, because it shows up for everybody and no one likes it. But no one knows how. No one likes the expectation. But they don't trust themselves enough. They won't allow enough to just let the goal be enough. Let the goal be enough.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? Just let the goal be...
You have a desire to reach a particular time on a particular day over a particular distance.
Yeah. Okay.
And that is enough.
You don't need to reach it to feel the way you want to feel.
In fact, ultimately, the moment you cross the finish line, you're already into another thing. So the process has completed. So there's no, that's what the word I used. I used process, I think, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I used process. So it is a process. Everything's always in process. But we have these discrete start finishes, start of training, start of a specific phase, start of the race, start of the last 10K or the last portion, and then the finish line. And mm-hmm. and we are always in process. We're always in the present, but we don't really structure our lives so much that way because we live in, you know, it just makes sense for us over an evolutionary cycles to think about time and use time and use a beginning and an end. And it's useful. It's helpful, but it's not real. It's not actually how we're perceived. We think it's how we're thinking that's reality, but it's really not. And most of us have a gut feel of that. If I ask somebody, have you ever been in the future? Have you ever been in the past? They fight with me for about a second and they almost always stop. Because we're never in the future, we're never in the past. Everybody understands that, but we don't live that way. We understand it up here, but not in our bodies.
Cool. So, Steve, let me try to there because there's a lot of things that usually come to mind when I hear you talk, and I want to combine, like try to combine two. I just love this idea of just noticing the desire and feeling into desire for the goal is enough. Like, I'm sure for a lot of people listening to this, this is going to be like a mindfuck. Like, what do you mean? Like the point of my desire is the fact that I have to reach it, right? If I don't reach it, that it's my reason to be unhappy and to be disappointed because, and I need that. Like, it's, if I don't have that, then I'll stop striving for goals and blah, blah, blah. It's a very fragile framework to approach, your goals and just life in general. So you had that on the one end, and then you talk about we're actually much more than we want to reach a specific goal in the marathon. Let's say we want to run a sub-3-hour marathon. Much more, we are much more interested in the experience that is gonna. Well, it's not even the goal that is gonna enable us to have the experience. It's just a placeholder for the open and all. For me, it really feels like. It's just this surrendered experience of just like, I just want to try to reach this desire. I just want to go for it. And I just want to have felt that I held nothing back. And then it's like, that's all I am after. So I want to start out like, what is that feeling state that you think most of us, most runners, most athletes are after? Like, what is that you think?
That we didn't waste our time. That... Well, let's say two things, because they're combined. I don't know that I could separate these two. I think they're tied a little bit. This so they're tied because I believe evolutionarily, the human species, perhaps all, but I only have experience in this lifetime of being human. And I love history and I love psychology and I love spirituality. So I follow the trends. I'm curious about what's been happening. What seems to be happening with the human race is we keep striving. It seems to actually be a part of what it means to be alive. And so goals are the way that we circumscribe and delineate discrete packets of experience or discrete periods of time or discrete things we're excited about or motivated by or blissed out by. And we put something out in front of us to give us a way to more effectively target whether we're moving towards a thing. Because there's something innately life-supporting that moves towards a thing. But I also think innately human especially. Because we can self-reflect, we're much more conscious of that. But I do think this part that I'm discussing about the goal is enough is something people should contemplate more. Because the goal is enough means that they're coming from an authentic place within their body, a desire, not an intellectual conceptual thing. How many times have you finished a race and then signed up for another race? You're not using your reason there. And I'm not saying that you should always do that, but what I'm saying is we know when we're goal setting, we're not really using reason. We're using passion. We're using life. This is why I'm not a Buddhist, why I'm not an Eastern person, I believe that we need that.
If these are authentic goals, I definitely agree that they come from passion and desire, but I think...
Even inauthentic goals too. Picking an authentic goal.
But it's a desire that I would say maybe comes from a very different place then, no? It's
still a desire.
It's desire for being patted on the back or for being told that, well, you're great because you ran this sub-3-hour marathon. Now you're part of the club or whatever. So, I mean, yeah, it's still...
Beware of judgment.
It's still a desire.
Beware of judgment. Yeah. You know, like everybody... I mean, I'm going to be really crude here. I find my wife incredibly sexually appealing. But so do I find an attractive 18-year-old that's walking down the street with hardly any clothes on. This is a desire. Where I do with my desires, yes, that's a different thing. But our desire is a natural part of human experience. And I want people to lean into and their goal is a natural desire for a thing. So that's why it's important that it be a goal. But then the problem is then it becomes an expectation, some expectation based on an accrual of a lot of things, a lot of things. And process or allowance is a space to say it's okay to have the goal. And why do we need the goal? Because we want to put something out in front of us that we can work towards because it's in our nature to do so. It's following nature to do so. Now, cleaning that up, making that be skillful, appropriate, useful, are ways that we can then contemplate a goal. So you set the goal, you have the desire, you write it down, and then people act on it. And maybe you're right, maybe that passion is a little over. Maybe you need to wait, take a beat, talk to your coach or talk to your family members, you know? I mean, how many times have people, it's ubiquitous that people finish a race and sign up for another one. And it comes from both places of disappointment and excitement, either way. But I think it's really important for us to honor this. This is coming from us in a natural place. Remember, heaven's on earth. Not somewhere. It's inside. And that's an inner experience. And then you can use reason at that point in time to then work through it and try to think through it and try to go through the process of doing that.
So maybe let's try to make it even a little more tangible. Like when you say... You're in this place, and I mean, now I'm not in this place, but let's say, well, I'm getting more and more in the place. So I start all of a sudden when I'm running in the woods, and I'm like, oh, maybe I just do this race again. I just like put this race on the calendar. And I just go hard on that day. It's like a 50 miler. It's gonna have a lot of elevation. It's beautiful out there. I'm just like, yeah, I'm getting excited for it. So how, like, and then. I mean, the place that I'm at right now is just like, oh, now I get to play in that, in the realm. I get to play with that desire. So it's like, for me, it's almost like a creative process. It's like, what do I need to, I don't need anything to be able to express a desire. I just get to go.
But you don't have you're not having any expectations.
Yeah. So, but how,
except to play,
I would still get myself into, I still catch myself having expectations definitely when I'm on the starting line, but like, so maybe if we leave me out of the equation now to not make it even more complicated, but like in general, how do we go from, oh, this excites me, I'm just like really ready to go, and like, oh, I'm just, oh, I want to do the work, and then all of a sudden it's like you're on the starting line of the race that you've been training for 6 months, and you're like being like suffocated by the tension of all this.
I say peeing down the side of your leg.
Yeah.
So let's use our example of a 3-hour marathoner. I just love the example of a 3-hour marathoner because for so many people can relate to it. Somebody who's trying to run under 220, you can relate. Somebody trying to run under 340, you can relate, right? But 3 is just a sexy number and the math is super simple. So, the person will say, I want to run a race, but they almost know, especially road racers, and I'm talking primarily to road racers. I do think trail runners are required by their events to have less expectations because they don't have the metric data sets that are going to be as useful to them. And the feeling state experience is much, much more valuable and necessary for the process. But with running, we have a lot of other ways to distract ourselves and to attach and move into outcome focus. And our goals typically end up saying, I want to run. Okay, somebody finishes a race and says, I want to run a Boston Marathon. Yeah. They know what their Boston qualifying time is. Right now, if you're a 30-year-old man, your Boston qualifying time is 3 hours, but we really know it's not 3 hours, it's something else, which then throws all kinds of spanners in the mix. But well, let's just, again, stay with 3 hours. They know... They'll say, I want to qualify for Boston. And therefore, because I want to qualify for Boston, now I've got an arbitrary time. I've got a time goal. So immediately, I have my expectation is that to succeed in my goal, I will need to finish the race in 2:59:59 or faster. Mm-hmm. Because the goal is on an outcome, and then that goal's outcome is not associated with a, it's not recognized as a nest, as they're not, they don't recognize it. Why do I want that? Because they take on all the cultural accretions of it. I'll have my training group will think I'm cooler. I'll feel better about myself. I'll get all the accolades and the social media things and all the things. That, even pre-social, this has been going on for humans forever, right? It's not just social media. Social media's attention on these kinds of things has made it a little confusing because we value them. But then the what the athlete is failing to recognize, which is really important here, is that they're really asking to go 2:59:59 because they associate accomplishment with the feeling state of reaching that place, not the actual number. The number is symbolic. It's a symbol of the feeling state they want to have, of enoughness, of achievement, of setting a goal and of finishing it. Many of the narratives that they may have through their lifetime and are we have culturally. So the goal is needed because you need some way to train. You got to have paces. You got to have ways to assess whether you're moving forward. Now, you can't, especially if you set a really specific goal. This is why I always say, hey, pay attention to the arbitrariness of your goal. Even Boston is arbitrary because it's not going to be 3 hours, not going to be 2:59:59, you know?
Yeah, and I think I want to interject real quick some reflections I had about goals as well, because at some point, like, I caught myself saying to an athlete too, like, when they say, oh, do you think my goal is still, like, feasible? Can I still do it? And I always caught myself, like, well, we don't know. And honestly, I don't really care. Like, it wouldn't change a thing about how you're training. Like, if you were to say, oh, Kobe, now I have like 2 hours extra of training. Okay, yeah, then we can change something about your training. Me, not even in all cases. So it's like, the more I talk about goals, it's like, actually, it's a thing to, like, a practical thing to transfer between two people, like an intention. Like, I have the intention to go about, like, to go really hard. And for me, that means about, like, this time. But then even, like, when you look at the practicality of it, like, it doesn't necessarily change a lot, except for me saying, oh, maybe you'll need like 2 years to be able to achieve that. And then voila, do you want to like commit 2 years? No, okay, then, and the goal is important, don't start. Like, and if you do, just start, like, don't stress out about it. So for me, it's like the goals are like, if I could feel your energy, then, or, and honestly, the more that I think about it now, like, couldn't that be just the goal? I'm here, I'm ready to go hard. I'm ready to find out what my body is capable of. Okay, tell me how much time you have, how willing you are to go for it. And then that's going to be your training plan. I don't even need to know how fast you have to go, right?
Well, I just want to state, from my perspective, this is why you are approaching coaching mastery, even at your young age. It takes many, many, many coaches a very, very long time to come to the recognition that it's all right to say to their athlete, I don't fucking care about your goal. Because I'm not going to have the feeling state. I'm going to have my own feeling state when you cross the finish line. And if I place my feeling state, which I did for many, many years, when you're in the pro and elite worlds, ooh, and in the collegiate, ooh, worlds, yeah, you have a lot. I'm sure you feel worse about your athletes' failures than they do sometimes. It's very hard as a coach. When you can get to the point where you can honestly and authentically say, I don't care whether you reach your goal. What I'm hoping you'll learn are the lessons necessary at this part of the journey, ooh, to continue your experience in an effective way. So this is a beautiful movement practice. And it stays with you when you're 40. And then you're 50 and you're 60, and you keep doing it because it's never been about the goal itself. It's been about the feeling state that you're hoping to achieve. I came to this because I could not stand that I cared more than my athletes. When a coach cares more than the athlete, there is fail all the way around. And so I make it aware. I don't say it all the time because it's also a really bad business practice, okay? Just to make you're mostly working with trail runners, so it's a little safer, you know? But when you're working especially with high performers who are trying to reach key core objectives and they want to reach those and they're hiring you to do that, and you say, I don't fucking care about your goal, You're going to need to be an old curmudgeon like me who can stand their ground hard. And then what I say to them is, what I'm really hoping to achieve is that you'll find that this is what you, this is really a path with heart for you. That's where my term path with heart starts to come through. Because listen, you're doing, the goal is there as a way station. Now, the next thing I want to say, so that's just the one thing about the part that you said about making that statement. I just want to honor your wisdom. And listeners of this podcast, whether they're listening from my side or your side, this is why I wanted to have these conversations with you, Kobe. Because you are not operating at a level that is typical for your age and experience. And you're learning a lot about what it is to really be coaching. And this is why I think it's so beautiful to see the trail context coming through your work. But let's move now to another piece that's really important around the reason why we set goals. So then why even set goals at all, you're saying?
And also, Steve, like, I maybe also want to like nuance, because to your point, it's not a good business practice to say, I don't care about your goal. But it's also not what, like, if you take those words at face value,
it's not really
it's not true. Exactly. Right.
It's not really true.
I care so much about you.
But not your goal time.
No, yes. That's not where the emphasis is going to be. You're going to be incredibly, you're going to be much faster after our time together.
Yes.
But I don't care about your goal. It's like, I don't know. I wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, you made, I was trying to hide that. Not on purpose. I was trying to hide that from the sense of, we don't need our listeners. A lot of times some of the stuff I say it in an esoteric or a hidden way, because I want people to unpack it on their own. But you just unpacked it. What you just unpacked was that it is a deep, that's why I'm calling you. You're like, well, how is he a master when he's telling people that they're idiots? You're not saying they're idiots. Mm-hmm. You're saying there's so much more here. There's so much more meat on this bone, and all you're doing is eating the skin. And there's meat on this bone. You're just eating the skin, and then you're not satisfied with the skin, because it's the meat you're going for, right? But the second piece about why do we even set goals? Yeah. We set goals because there are human constraints, physical constraints, seemingly. Now, sometimes if you catch me on a good day, I'll roll with Ilya Kipchoge and say, no human is limited. But my day-to-day experience of myself and others is that is not a true statement in practicality. It may be a conceptual, theoretical truth, but it's certainly not a day-to-day applicable truth to most people's lives. And that's where it's beautiful, because it's a kind of a koan, right? It's like this little pithy thing that's supposed to make you think a little bit deeper and work at. And I think that's why he says it. I think Kipchoge is one of the great, wise, spiritual running leaders we've ever had. And I think people will recognize that more and more.
I think he's also... he's also referring to the feeling state.
Correct.
That's my guess.
I think so too. Yeah. He's working at many levels. Let's just say that. The way to state that is it's working at operating at many levels. But in the day-to-day operational way of how do I execute the next session, then you need some kind of, you need constraints that are not somebody saying, I've been coaching for 30 years. Do you know how many people told me I want to go under 3 when they haven't gone under 3 at 30? I mean, you're not going to run a minute per mile faster. And if you do continue to train consistently at a minute per mile faster, you'll burn out or blow up or get injured. It's just not going to work. So we do have to work within the constraints of the living system and the way the living system. That doesn't need to dampen our passion and our excitement and our goal setting, but we need to actually put some constraints on it. And that's why you hire a coach. But most people think they're hiring, but most people hire a coach with the hope that it's just going to be lockstep, point, shoot. And it doesn't work that way. And so we, having done this for a long time, have recognized the path's not straight. And the goal is worthy. And if the goal's worthy and the goal's good, then it's good to train for. But if you attach too much to it, you're never... one of the reasons why goals work is because they're ahead of you, not because they're where you're at.
Ooh, and also, it's like... because now in this episode, I'm like, should I just drop goals altogether? Like, is there still a point to it? But it's also, it's focus. It just brings so many things into focus. And it's like, it's like, even when I go through my visualization exercises, it's like, that is what that, like with the 220, it just helped to really focus and visualize running 319 kilometer pace. And then we'll get into that, but I think it's then, how do you set goals skillfully, right? How do you make sure that you can still set the goals and not lose yourself in the attachment, or be open to the exercise that then is opened up by setting the goal. So we don't have to go into that yet, but that was just also a quick reflection that there's still value in goals.
I think they're essential, not value. They're essential. And I could go, if I could go off on a long diatribe of the importance between attention and awareness and where those sit in that space, but I'm not going to do that because I do that too often and I'm going to stay on task. But I do think attention and awareness are the key here. So at some point in time, if we want to circle back to attention and awareness and how the human mind operates and the two systems we're kind of using constantly, that really highlights how goals are important and how process is important, and how goals are important and how process. You need the attention on a certain thing to get you towards the thing, but then you also need to step back into the process of what's going on. And that's an awareness state that you're trying to feel it, you're trying to sense it. But then to tell if you did well, you got to refer to the data. So that's important. The way I manage this in terms of application of goals and in a skillful way, as you described, is that what I try to do is I do what I call a three-pace range. We've talked about this one or two times before. And this is a really practical way of deconditioning from expectation. Let's say that you've run a 305 marathon and you want to run a 3-hour marathon. What I like to say is we're going to set up a 3-pace range for you. You've just completed a race, you ran 304 and you're really excited. And you know the next obvious, arbitrary, very arbitrary, but obvious, is it really? But anyway, goal is 3 hours, right? Why couldn't it be 302.05? Like, why does it? Okay. Again, that goes into reality questioning. I'm not going to go there. But that 3 hours is, okay, let's going to go there. But then what we want to do is we need, one of the great things that one of the great coaches in the world that we learned, most of us learned so much from, he does not get anywhere near the credit that he deserves. He's well-recognized. The name is well-recognized. But he is, he did something that is exactly what I'm going to be describing in a very scientific way. Okay. His name is Dr. Jack Daniels, and his Daniels running method is one that most people know. And what he does is he uses a VO2 chart, and that V dot chart that he uses is basically operating in kind of a 3-pace range. So what he's doing is he assumes you have a goal, but his V dot range is saying, but we're going to stay at 305. Everything we're going to do is going to be in the 305 range of paces because you've done it. Mm. And we know you have a goal, and we're going to let you move outside the V dot a little bit, but we're going to be very judicious, as opposed to saying, no, since I run 305, the person wants to go 3 hours, and now their V dot is 3 hours, and they're not ready for 3 hours. They may have just barely gotten to 304, and many people have, especially when the people who are most excited are the people who have big breakthroughs. Their big breakthrough came because they ran 6 marathons at 310, 315, 307, 306, and they're like, I can't get 305. Then they go 304, and they're like, boom, I did it. And you're like, no, you are now actually at 305. So you go to 305, if you go all the way down to 3 hours, guess what's going to happen now? Now you're going to go through that whole process. It might be a year. It might be 5 years. But if it's a real plateau, like a lot of people who are older who I work with, they're starting to reach the end. When you get to 3 hours, you're starting to get to probably near your absolute potential for some people, depending on their skill sets and other things. You know, when somebody's at 3 hours and 30 minutes, nobody's at their skill set. Any human being that is fit and fiddle and does good work should be able to run under 4 hours consistently, unless they're older, because we are evolutionarily designed to cover ground at faster than 8 minute per mile pace, or we can't survive. We didn't survive. So we're pretty good at it, not good at it locally in our current lived experience, because a person needs to get fit enough to get there. But evolutionarily, most of us can do that. Not many of us were ever very good at running sub 5 minute mile pace for extended windows of time. Those were a particular class of human, right? So anyway, I diatribed there, but The 3 hour number is useful to have as a goal because we want to shoot for a thing, but it's not where we are. We're still at 305. And what I do is I add another number. I go back to 310 Because 3:10 can happen any day, almost any day, and almost under any conditions. And if you can't hit the 3:10 paces that you're trying to hit, then there's a real reason for it. And that should be something to put, as a coach, I put an exclamation point beside that. Was it weather? Was it stress? Was it, you know, it could be a number of things, but it's a kind of outside the pale of what we know they're capable of on a consistent basis. Okay. Now, just to tidy this up, I use paces because I find them the most appropriate. I don't use heart rates. I try to correlate a felt sense subjectivity scale with people sometimes who are interested in that. But I use paces because they're the easiest, most concrete way to work with a wide variety of people across a swath of online and face-to-face people. So I use them. And then when I do that, I've got a pace for a mile pace for them, a corresponding, for 3 hours, they've got a corresponding half marathon, 10K, 5K, 3K, you know, and we work in that zone all the way up and down, right? And then same thing with 305 and the same thing for 310. What you find when you do that is that when you get on a workout, then you know that I'm going to do 6 times a mile at my 10K pace, but I'm going to do my 10K range. Kobe, that's at least 20 seconds and a mile. So for someone running 3 hours, that 10K pace might be, let's say, 6:25 to 6:40 or 6:45. So if they're having a great day, they go down to the faster time. If they're having a ho-hum day, then they do it at the pace that's 305 related. If they're having a horrible day, then they run at 310. If they find after rep 3 or 4 that everything is slower than the 310 pace, then we either stop because there's something wrong with them personally, or we slow down because we're dealing with weather conditions or stressors that are a problem. And so we just know it, and we just put an exclamation point by it. Why is that happening? Sometimes I tell people to stop. Sometimes I tell people to keep going. It just depends, right? But this 3-pace range, now what happens is people then can get skillful at sensing their experience that's going on. And then they start to see the data assess and accrue in the fitness space that's most appropriate for where they're at. And they start to see maybe they're not at the 3-hour, but they are safely getting towards the 303 and then the 302 and then the 301. And then maybe after in one cycle or maybe in 2 or 3 cycles, they start to see the data sets coalescing around that 3-hour time. And then I'm saying, let's go for it. You know, we just did this in Boston. Boston just happened yesterday. I had a lot of people going for it. We were supposed to have really good weather and a tailwind. It was supposed to be the day that Boston was just going to be off the charts for everybody. Turns out anybody in the first wave did okay. People in the second wave, I mean, it was 65 degrees and 62 degrees and sunshine at the starting line. People were sweating. I live in Central Texas. My athletes were sweating on the starting line. So you're not going to run. And my athletes who do a 3-pace range, guess what they did? They went out, they tried for their goal. They might have gone out at 6:50 or 7-minute pace. They play with that for a little while, and then they're like, this is not happening today. Back off, relax, wave at the crowd, kiss babies, give high fives along Wellesley and kiss the girls and kick it in at the end and hopefully have a good day. And if not, then, you know, you live to fight another day. And there were, to a person, they all knew the reason for why they did not reach the time goal that they had assessed. And so they had a different feeling state experience at the finish line. But if all they were thinking about was sub 3 and it was 62 degrees at the start, 99% of them, if they hadn't had that ability to not expect, but to just be open and allow what was playing on out and be in process, then they would be deeply disappointed no matter how. They would never be able to really account for the weather because they put their personal experience, their lived experience, their own identity into, I had to do it. And they will not accept an excuse. They won't accept an excuse because the reason they view as an excuse because they weren't enough. Like, what are you fucking talking about? You weren't enough. You are going to need to run at minimum 15 seconds per mile slower at 62 degrees in the sunshine than you are going to be able to do at 42 degrees or 52 degrees. I mean, even 52 degrees is a significantly different thing. I know, sorry, I'm using Fahrenheit, not Celsius, but Probably people
can
make,
still do it, but yeah. I think the listeners might struggle.
So they can, you can plug it into your calculator if you want to know what those are. Yeah. But there's a way in which you should be able to see that. So I give that as a little way that I can say, here's one real practical way a person cool. can begin to start working with no expectations cool. while still having a goal.
And let's unpack that, because I want to prevent. I mean, I want to prevent. I want to prevent. Sounds like I'm stepping up for a big cause here, but it's easy to listen to this and to now say, oh, I'm gonna just implement the three pace method, and oh, then I'm gonna have no expectations at the starting line. And but I think it's like it's incredibly important to highlight or to point at the thing that you are actually maybe consciously, but might as well just be subconsciously learning through that process, because your athletes now in this particular method are not just putting in reps from a physical perspective, they're also putting in reps from a mental perspective. They get to practice this at least on a weekly basis, maybe even twice a week if they also go about this in the long run. I don't know if they have set paces for long run. And so now, I mean, this is my perspective, and I'm curious to hear what you think is the actual mechanism behind it, because it's one thing to say, oh, now I know it's going to help me to have no expectation, but an expectation on a starting line is not something that you just tell yourself, don't have any expectation, don't have any expectation, don't have any expectation. All you're doing is adding layers of expectation. An expectation, if you haven't worked with that on the starting line, is generally just the observation that you notice, oh, I am tense. I am not just excitedly nervous. I am getting to a nervousness that is actually debilitating to my ability to perform. So you have to have done the work before you get to the starting line. Like, you can't all of a sudden try to shortcut all this wiring that you have running like for all of your life, when like the pressure is the highest. Like, you have to have done the work months and months and months before. So my reasoning here, or the way I look at it, is just that if you do that at least once a week, you do the humility check. You're like, oh, today won't happen. Maybe I am not respecting my nutrition enough. Maybe I'm not respecting my sleep enough. Whatever the reason might be, it might be weather, might be all kinds of things. I'm not hitting my paces. Ooh, but I can still connect to the pace that feels strong for me today, or if a pace that feels good for me today. Like, you already are like loosening the expectation a little bit on a weekly basis. It's the thing that I am seeing from where I'm standing, but I'm curious to hear, like, why do you think that your athletes are, the way you put it, they're basically, we're all capable of doing it on race day. So, but it's not something that you tell them the day before, and now like you poof, now you go feel good about whatever the outcome is. So, well, what is the underlying process that is happening on the mental emotional level?
Well, you're really nailing this. You're really nailing what's going on. So this is the lived experience of a starting line. I called it one of my. I realized, you know, when I about 15 years ago, I came to realize my job was to give people good starting line experiences. And I took it seriously, and it took about 10 years to figure out that a good starting line, I reverse engineered good starting line experiences, the few that ever showed up, to find out that at the root, and this is good shit. Okay. This is many bodies thrown up against a brick wall to achieve this, okay? Not on purpose. We were all shooting for a goal, but I had their goals as my goals, and we all set expectations around them. So what I realized is what was operative with good starting line experiences, those who had them, was self-trust. So what you reverse engineer is trusting yourself. And the only way we trust ourselves is through lived experience over and over, where there's no need for some giant leap. And this is what expectations do. They create, typically people have not done the work, as you're describing. So they're standing on a starting line knowing at some deep existential level they haven't done the work. because they don't have data sets that are showing that they've done the work. If they did, they would probably be okay. But remember, most of them chose a goal that was really a big stretch to begin with. And so they're probably not getting that data set trust. And that trust comes from the data sets, from those constraints we talked about. By opening up the window of those, it allows those data sets to coalesce naturally around the real fitness of the athlete. And that
are you now talking to the fact that they have data in their training runs that just represents being able to run the sub-3? I mean, I think you're also talking about that, but I'm also wondering, like, they've also done some work again on that deeper level too, right? Or is that necessarily not essential?
It's not. Yeah, so it happens, because ultimately we are always. I'm sorry, people. There's no such thing as mental.
What do you mean by that?
Mental is a construct. It's not a real thing. Your nervous system is your mental game. Mm-hmm. Your nervous system is your spiritual game. Anything outside of it, your nervous system is the operating structure of how we function as a living system. Period. Mm. We don't have any question about my dog or a slug or an ape. We recognize it. We don't talk about their mental experience. We talk about their nervous system experience. But as soon as we get human and we get self-reflective, we get all fucking confused. There are no minds. That is a conceptual thing. It's not a real thing. Mm-hmm. Do you feel a mind in your body? Try. Mm. Here, you know this. You've done much work on this. Are you your thoughts, Kobe?
Let's not go down there.
If we went there, you would say, okay, that will start to lead you to the place of recognizing you are not a mind. We are not mind. There are things we call a mind, but that is really a complex nervous system. Mm. And that complex nervous system is housed in a body that we're attached to physically, part of us, and we are experiencing on a day-to-day basis. And so what you're doing is you're training your nervous system to appropriately and skillfully manage challenging things that are coming up. And then as you see that your nervous system is doing that consistently and safely, and that when you have anomalies, this is why I love anomalies. My program is based on pattern and anomaly. Pattern and anomaly. I don't give a shit about the patterns. My program is the tits, dude. It is a good program. It's excellent. It's hard. It's good, okay? I'm not saying it's the greatest. I'm not saying it's better than anybody else's. But for me and my people who get really serious about doing my system, it works. So I don't worry about the pattern. Now I get to focus only on the anomalies, because the anomalies tell me everything I need to know about the program and then also about the person. Mm-hmm. And occasionally, I find out like what I found out yesterday. I've been talking about doing training sessions at 10 o'clock in the morning in Austin, Texas, leading up to Boston, because people are on the starting line at 10 a.m., at 11 a.m., at noon, and the weather conditions are going to be warmer no matter what than anything we're dealing with at 5:30 in the morning, and it's going to be a different situation, and we're never training under those constraints. I mean, you'd think after 30 years of getting people ready for Boston, I would have figured it out. I did figure it out, but I forget again as we get further and further out from the race and I start focusing on the other things. There's no doubt we need 2 or 3 runs that start at 10:30 a.m. regardless of the weather. In fact, if it's hotter and sunnier, the better. And we're going to do our work there, not to get the data set information, but to get the nervous system adaptation necessary for appropriate, skillful means to deal with. How do I deal with 62 degrees? And is that different from 65 degrees? If it's cloudy, is it one way? If it's sunny, is it another way? But ultimately, all that stuff, we can talk about that from a data set analysis perspective, but it comes back to this overriding principle that I reverse engineered: self-trust. Mm-hmm. It doesn't actually matter what your watch says. The data is only using to triangulate us. Mm-hmm. So we're just trying to get an idea of where we're at so that we can be offline, or we can be in a more relaxed, open state throughout the majority of the race, because it's expensive to be in an attention state. It's less expensive to be in an open awareness state. But you need to have that self-trust to be in that open awareness state with any skillful means.
Cool. I'm trying, like, if I were to put that in my words, because I love our practice. I mean, I don't want to talk for you, but it feels like a practice for me in these conversations where I just want to make things tangible. Yes, there's a spiritual layer to what we do, but there's also just like a very tangible performance aspect to it. And when you say intention, it's hard to be focused on intention.
Attention. ATTENTION.
Yeah, attention.
So that was attention. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
So that is like, I have to reach my goal. I have to reach my goal. I have to reach my goal. This is my goal time. This is my goal time. Am I hitting my goal time?
No. Yes, but I would reframe that just for more clarity, just not to interrupt you because you're incorrect. I just want to give a little more clarity to that. It's that this is where I need to be. This is where I need to be. This is where I need to be in relation to the goal. Not this is my goal time. This is my goal time. This is where I need to be in relation to the goal time. The attention is, if you're not expecting, then you're just there. And at some point in time, the preponderance of data in that set will tell you you're not ready or something's not well. And then you can decide to double down and go for it and then risk a blow up. Or you can back off and allow the race to come to you in some other way. And what I have found is both of those might be the right choice in a given situation on a given day for a given person. Yeah. But I'm not on the course with a little headset in their ear like the cycling guys are, telling them exactly what to do because they're reading their lactate level, their heart rate, their power meter. You know, people don't recognize this about cycling at the elite level. Like, cycling, the reason why we see the kinds of performance and the things that we see in cycling is they have technology that runners don't have. If you put that kind of technology in the hands of runners, we would be under 150 for the marathon. Mm. Certainly under 155. But we are still, quote unquote, pure. I'm not saying it's a good thing, okay? But we're still not, we've allowed the shoe tech in.
Yeah.
We've got the doping tech, whatever that's all going on is happening. We've got the shoe tech in, but I would very vociferously argue against the use of wearables, earables, those kinds of things, and all those data sets. It would change our sport, maybe for the better.
Yeah.
But who knows? So because it's loaded, it's a little bit of a different thing. But anyway, that was a little aside because I am a diehard track fan, but you can see how those data, how that's happening for the athlete in the moment. They're making these critical decisions and they're making them alone. And that self-trust aspect is so alive because you have to make it yourself.
Okay. So then I won't even try to connect it to what you're saying because I don't understand enough yet what you mean by attention and awareness.
Yeah, we'll save that.
But I want to point to what I experienced, the importance to be able to run free of expectation in any given race. And then I'm curious if you could connect them. So I'll let you do the hard work.
We can close with this, right?
Exactly. We have 15 minutes.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
Let's try it.
Cool. Let's go.
But I appreciate it. When I look at my best performances by far, and they're both in marathon and trail, there's like very specific races, one in Rotterdam and one in a more competitive trail race here in Belgium. It's just that my goal was there to communicate with my coach, and this is the level that I am shooting for. So she's like, oh, if he wants to be able to run this 2:30 marathon, then that means that I'm gonna have to like invite him to step into this level of commitment to training for the next 6 to 12 months. And then that became clear, and then as soon as that was clear, she's also very good to go back to run at perceived efforts, and that's our spiel, and I love that. I just love to play in that space. And we basically did not talk about the goal anymore until we did some like reference tests, races, and it's like, oh yeah, you're on schedule, cool, okay, cool, but like nothing changes. We just continue to do and go the way that we were going. And so you get to the race and you still have that like, I have told so many people that I'm gonna run a sub 2:30 marathon, so that is my part of expectations that is still alive. It's like it's still there. But then I know, going to the self-confidence that you're talking about, it's like I also know what a strong stride feels like. I know what is strong and truthful and honest, which is also a topic that I would love to talk about, like being able to be true with every step. It's like, whoo, it's a topic I love. But I know what that feels like by having gone through all of these workouts, all of these sessions, all of these half marathon prep races. Because yeah, I was explaining that I still have levels of expectation in myself because I'm on the starting line and I'm like, I'm feeling some of the nervousness around, oh damn, I really put out this goal so wide open. And just to give a little context, my previous marathon was like a 2:42 or 2:44. So it's still like, we're still taking big leaps. It's like, well, now we just go for a 2:30. It's like, yeah, Kobe, why? Like, going back to arbitrary goals, but it's a goal that I could tell was like really, really exciting me. It's like, I'd rather try than like, whatever, I just picked a goal. And then, so I still have that level of expectation, but then on the same note as well, I know exactly what a strong stride feels like, is also what I was saying. And so there's just such a deep level of trust at this point in my ability to execute the most optimal race on race day, whatever that will be, because there's so many things I don't control, but that I know exactly what that would feel like. And so I just start out the race and I'm not even thinking about the goal. And so what happens is, actually, I had a funny miscommunication with a couple of guys that I thought they were going to go out at my pace, but turns out that they were going out at the 2:28 pace. And so I just ended up running with them. And then like, it's hard to miss the 10K splits. Like, it's like, oh, wow, this doesn't add up. It's yep. Like, I'm going too fast, but I'm not going too fast. It's like, it's okay. I'm good. Because I know in the past, I would have played with my mind. It's like, oh no, it's like, you're overdoing it, you're going to blow up. And that immediately already changes the physiology. Like, your nervous system is like getting additional stress. And now it's like, no, we'll continue. We'll continue. I know what it feels like. I've been here before. We'll just continue. All I have to do is just eat and run. And so, then obviously what happens, I just get to experience step by step what is possible that day. And I end up running a 2:27 marathon instead of a 2:30 marathon. It's like, wow, how, like, I mean, sure, it's probably also because I haven't reached my potential yet and there's still lots of room to play with. But that, on the same note, I also know if I were with a much more closed mind and a mind that was not ready to allow things to unfold the way that they have unfolded in such a good way that day, that I would not be able to reap the fruits or the benefits from that shape that I had on that particular race day. And so for me, it's like, the clear intention going in it was like, yeah, I mean, the intention, I wouldn't even say that the intention was the 2:30. The intention was like to just, I always call it like heart open, all in. I don't know what it is about, but it's like, it feels like I just want to surrender to this experience on like the deepest level that I dare to go, like the depth of my courage is like where I want to go in that particular race. And so, and that was my intention. Like, my intention is to go all in. And it doesn't mean I start out at my 10K pace. Like, all in also requires a lot of like wisdom and connection with that subjective space. But that is really what having no expectations is about. Because as soon as you start to have expectations, it's like, oh, there's so much nervousness and so much tension in that system. Because if something doesn't line up perfectly, it's like, oh no, I went out too fast. This is not okay. Oh, I can't take this gel. It's like, oh no. It's like, I had nothing to lose. Like, I can never lose the fact that I can give everything I want to give. Like, there's nothing that can stop me from giving everything I want to give. And that is like why I love running so much. It's just my way to, it's why it feels like self-expression, you know? It's like, it's just my way to show everything that I am, to show everything that I've got. And it's why, yeah. It's like, I have nothing to lose. I don't know. Maybe I'll get to some point again where I start believing that. But it's like, oh, I don't know. I'm making these gestures where it's like, open, like my heart. Chest is going wide open, not just from a breathing perspective, but the heart is so open. It's like, and it's such a surrendered, beautiful, optimally flowing, in the zone kind of state where what can go wrong in that state? It's like,
but that was
my little rant on.
No, it wasn't beautiful. And I'm so glad you shared that story, because I think it's going to highlight a few key things that are hidden a little bit in my three pace range that are already there. And part of the structure, because I use that, right? Because you were sort of not critiquing, you were just saying, hey, I had a different experience. I set a really, really big, audacious goal, and then my coach created some constraints that I needed to abide by. Number one, more volume likely. Probably needed to do certain kind of work. You needed to get off of the watch in certain ways and go by perceived effort. And so just want to highlight that the reason I use a three-pace range is to basically mimic the exact same thing. It's just repeat doing... Perceived exertion is very hard to do across a wide swath of people. Perceived exertion is a really subjective experience that is individually biased and based. It's very hard. And my bet is that coach that you have probably recognized you had a different RPE than another person had a different RPE, even if they were trying to prescribe some kind of overall one so she could parse your data effectively, right? But ultimately, she didn't want you to think about that. She wanted you just to stay in the RPE. The reason for that is that the human living system is extremely good at operating at optimal level. And optimal level is whatever is appropriate for your ground reaction time and your push off. Whatever your, as you said, I was feeling strong. I could feel myself running with... In the right place, in the right effort, in the right thing. You know, you use different language, much more poetic and beautiful, but you felt it, you knew it when you felt it. And she was getting you to trust your RPE. You know it when you feel it, and even if the clock is telling you something that might not indicate the truth, trust your RPE. And you did trust your RPE, okay? So that RPE, that rate of perceived exertion, I just use in a three-pace range because I can circumscribe it a little bit better. And many of my athletes are much more experienced overall with marathoning than you were at that time. If I'm working with a new marathoner, I'm going to really take those training wheels off of paces. I might widen their pace range a lot wider or even ask them not to use it. But I find that people just do better if they have that, and it's easier for me to read my data. Okay, so that's just wanted to talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about your starting line experience. You set a big, hairy, audacious goal. You're never not going to be nervous. You're not going to get flow state if you don't have a risk. No risk, no reward. So there was a risk. And that what you were feeling on the starting line was not a lack of self-trust. What you were feeling there was risk. This is a special moment. The most special moment you had in that entire training cycle. It's still part of a process, but it's the special moment. If you don't feel nervous, that might be a problem. Now, for some people, they do really well when they're not nervous because they just lean into the self-trust so much that they don't worry about it, okay? But others, you and I'm much more like you. I need that to know I'm in the arena, to know it's life or death. Something big is going to be asked of me, and there's no pull, ripcord, there's no pull-out, it's just... We're just going for it all the way. But the trust still is necessary for you to operate effectively in the space of the course of the race, so your nervous system doesn't throw those curveballs at you where you start to really freak out. So you saw maybe 30 seconds too fast or a minute too fast at the 10K. I mean, probably 15 to 30 seconds too fast at the 10K, right? But you don't freak out because you're like, I'm where my coach trained me to be. And or so there's trust there in your coach and the system that you did, and you trust your feeling state because you've got really good with perceived effort at the feeling state. This is why running alongside my pace range is a constant and repeated and always discussion, a felt sense experience. And each year I'm giving more and more and more insights to individuals around what that is. But felt sense experience is very hard to articulate in mass. Even in more than two or three, because once you get two or three, somebody's right where they need to be in the pocket, and somebody's stretching too far, and somebody's not working hard enough. Because we're too unique and individual. It's never going to be that way. And we've seen people get really better because they ran with somebody faster, or somebody get a lot better because they ran with somebody slower. But really, truly, the way the living system works is it's always going to be better if it's just doing what feels appropriate at that time, given the effort and the scale that your coach has said they want you to work at. I just use paces because they're the most concrete, effective, and useful way to work, and allows me to keep my price range low and allows me to execute in a way that gives people the rate starting line experiences they want and to hopefully optimize for that. So your coach and I work very, very similarly. Now, one thing to also note about that, you made a big volume. You made a big jump to go from 242 to 230, 228, or 230 was your goal, right? That happened over an extended window of time. I don't know, how long did she give you? 12 months? 18 months? What was the window that she gave you to jump for that far, approximately?
Oh, she didn't even, I mean, she didn't, like, there was, the way we approached it was also very open. Like, we were like, we were committed to this 230 goal, regardless of how long it takes. Like, it might take us, like, 4 attempts.
And how long did it take?
I think, I blank on the exact time, but it was like
ballpark.
It wasn't under 12 months, but it wasn't like, let's say a year.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the other problem that happens here, Kobe, is nobody's willing to take a year. Very few people are.
To me, it's like, that's fast. That's not too long.
But many of the people I'm working with, they're working on 3-month, 6-month windows. And it's just very, very hard. And when there's a command performance with an outcome-based reaction, you know, so I do think that there's a lot more, that what you just described is a little bit more of a privilege and or a point of view. I don't think it's privilege. I would prefer to work with everybody the way that you are describing, but that's not the business model I work in. Okay, I've made in my podcast Running on Purpose, I have a whole series. I did a whole episode on stop. You need seasonality. You need consistency. You need to do 18-month windows. You need to take your time. You need to assess and adjust and adapt to load increases, to speed increases, to new things, to getting a feeling state subjective / RPE. Like down, you know, a real relationship with the body that you can trust. So again, beautiful story, but I think it's important for people to highlight that's a 12-month story with a young man who was ready, who's probably capable of going 220. Should he take the time, energy, and effort towards it, and he was willing to make the sacrifices necessary, right? Again, to make a new, renewed window of time to do that.
And also the point of my story was not, and maybe I shouldn't have mentioned the times, because the times are not at all the point of my story. It was really very much just pointing to what is possible, what kind of experience is possible when you really embrace this process of working through expectation and really like and taking this as a part of your preparation to grow freer and freer and freer, or more and more free from expectation throughout the process. Because I there was, of course, there's talent, there's physical, and there's my dedication and commitment to this process. There's a great coach. There's like, obviously there's many circumstances, and I know I would not have been able to do this if I was very closed and caught in the expectation that everything had to happen on that particular day. So that was really the main thing that I was trying to.
I do want to make sure you hear that was not a critique. That was much more of contextualization. Because let's go back to how we started this whole conversation was, if we tell people allowance or process, or I prefer your word, actually, you came up with the best word, surrender. Okay? People.
And let's try to use that as our closure for today's episode.
This surrendering is very hard as a concept. And so you just get, what I was trying to do was just to bring a little bit of contextualization around how long it takes to learn to surrender and how to be good at trusting yourself to surrender. Not that you were special, right? Though you are, I love talking with you, but more along the lines of I think that people can see that and think, oh, I could do that in 3 months. And that's absolutely ridiculous. To do it in 12 months is really, really hard. I would expect someone for that level of performance to be somewhere around the 18-month window of gaining the skill sets necessary, physiological, psychological, all the other things, right? But ultimately, let's just go back to wrap this up to surrender well, to have no expectations is going to require a patterning of your nervous system that is radical, physically, mentally, and spiritually. So we're not talking about something light. And that's why we got really deep into the practical details and the nitty-gritty of it, why we talked about a three-pace range and RPE. I mean, we probably could expand this topic to go even further to the kinds of strength training someone might do, or the kinds of mental visualization things somebody might do, or what does an actual specific session look like without expectations or surrendering. But we don't have time within the time limit that we have. And I don't know that people would be able to grok it. I do think ultimately what we've done is given people the opportunity to see, do I want no expectations? Do I recognize no expectations is to be fruitful and useful for me in my experience of my running and my racing? And if the answer is yes, the light, that's the dark, the light of that is surrender. And believe you me, Kobe, no one's going to want to go without. Very few people are going to be willing to do that. But you gave an unbelievably beautiful pre-race line description of what surrender feels like on a starting line. In fact, you lived it out in this conversation. You fritzed the internet with your energy. You know what I mean? Like, you were so open and you were so feeling that heart-centered space that you, yeah, you were nervous, but you were wide open in that space, right? You weren't judging. You weren't doing all that stuff, but you're, the surrender to the moment was, I'm ready. I trust myself. I trust my coach and my situation. Let's go out and see what happens. Anything can happen, but we are going to surrender to the experience instead of saying, I expect to go through 10K at X. And if I don't go through 10K at X, game over. I'm a failure. Nervous system dumps you all the bad shit and it's over and done with, and you might as well just walk off the course, you know? So so I think that that's, I think that that.
And honestly, Steve, yeah, and I know I'm going over my own time here, but it's just something that I feel so much when I when you, it's like it's like strange that I haven't mentioned it earlier, but also that is what running has become for me. Like, racing is just nothing but a beautifully crafted opportunity for me to play with those aspects on like a deeper level, because I know the pressure and the context of that race is just gonna like trigger the same things that are gonna be triggered in training, but just like more profoundly. And it's like, when I'm on the starting line of a race, I'm no longer on the starting line of the race for something that has to happen. It's like, I am just going out there. Like, I genuinely you feel like I'm going out on the battlefield and let's see what happens. Maybe today is the day that everything just goes smoothly and I'm like, wow, damn, I didn't know I was capable of that. Or maybe today is the day that I just like, I figure out, oh, I just totally overdid it in training. I'm so tired. I won't be able to get even remotely close to hitting my goal. And so I have to go into warrior mode in a different way where I'm like, and I get to accept myself, love myself, feel all the shame, all the guilt, all these, and that is gonna be my battle for today. And I'm there as much for that as I'm there for like the flowy experience that is just like the physical, like ultimate experience. And that is where, that is how the openness feels. And that's like the openness I wish for anyone to experience, to just see running as that wide of a playground and like opportunity for us to practice fundamental aspects of ourselves that are also ultimately going to benefit us in the way we live. It's like, running is my training ground for life. It's something I keep saying over and over and over, and I go out there and I practice being the Kobe I want to be. Sometimes it's running fast, sometimes it's failing hard. And I'm here for all of that. And yeah,
it's a beautiful race.
It's my wish for anyone who loves running. It's a beautiful race, man.
That's what it is. You just summed it up perfectly. I think we can end on that note and it will send us right where we need to be.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Sweet. Thanks, Steve.
Well, thank you, Kobe. And, it's always...
Yeah, I'll let this one sink in.
It's always a highlight.
beautiful. Thanks. Bye-bye.